I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. You are not alone if you feel the loss of people in your life more acutely around the holidays. Psychologists say this time of year really does amplify our sense of loss and grief. It's a time when people expect to feel more connected, more joyful. They're supposed to feel joy, but instead it can feel more isolating. As we reflect on holiday traditions and thoughts of entering a new year, even older sadnesses, disappointment, and grief can rise to the surface. But there are strategies for managing how we feel loss and how to help others who are going through hard times. Donna Soltura is a social worker focused on palliative care and bereavement support at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. She's also part of the adjunct faculty at the Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth. Donna, it's a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And Laura Basile worked for more than a decade as a clinical psychologist at Boston Children's Hospital. She now teaches part-time as a visiting assistant professor at Middlebury College and has a therapy practice in Middlebury, working with kids, teens, and families. It's nice to have you on the program as well, Laura.
Delighted to be here.
So can we talk a little bit about why this heavy focus and an intense time of sort of forced joy and togetherness and family, and you're supposed to be sharing your pictures of how wonderful your kids are and how happy everyone is, and your Christmas letter should include all of the wonderful things that have happened to you. I mean, it's kind of obvious why this amplifies the hard times for so many people, but really for people who are suffering from grief and loss. Donna, can you go into that psychology a little bit for us?
I think one of the things that occurs is that people don't feel happy. Especially if a loss is more recent, or if this is the very first holiday without that person, which is not to say that grief takes a year, which some well-meaning people try to tell their friends, but simply that this is the very first gathering of your family or your community for this particular holiday. And so you feel the absence of that person quite strikingly. I think of it as the empty chair.
Hmm. And Laura, it's not just death that people are coping with. Sometimes it's illness of their own or others, or even, you know, the end of a relationship or a change in the way your family is structured that can really, those feelings can really surface at this time of year.
Yeah. And what's complicated about it is when we lose someone we love to death, it's a very clear loss. But some of these other losses are more ambiguous, like divorce, like people that have come to our country and have lost their homeland. So what's hard is if people don't recognize the loss or understand it, it makes it harder for people to grieve.
Let's go right to a call from Rob, who's on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Rob.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I wanted to touch on that idea of ambiguous loss in regards to Alzheimer's and dementia. Mm. And the idea of when you have a loved one that's physically still present and alive in your life, but psychologically they're missing, and how tricky that can be to navigate for those folks, the 12,000 Vermonters and over 30,000 Vermont caregivers for those that have Alzheimer's and dementia. And I just wanted to put that out there. And that term ambiguous loss has helped me to describe my feelings around grief to friends and family who aren't going through that type of loss in their life. So wonderful program, and I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Rob, thanks for calling in. I really appreciate hearing from you. And actually, if you're still there, Rob, before you go, oh, no, Rob left. But so, Donna and Laura, then this idea then of somebody like a caregiver for someone who has Alzheimer's or dementia and may or may not even be physically present in the home at a holiday gathering, but is alive, but, you know, not able to participate, and maybe your feelings are very ambiguous and ambivalent. How can a friend be helpful in that kind of situation? Because as you said, Laura, it's not a death where you can say, I'm so sorry to hear about your mother. And it may be something that's been going on for years. And so you, as a friend, sort of forget that this is a really difficult thing that someone is going through. Donna, do you have advice?
Yes, we talk about this. I think about the loving obligation we have to each other in our families and partnerships. And someone loves someone. What they're recognizing is their body is there, but their personality might be vastly different. It isn't only an absence of certain things, but also some other personality behaviors could come across, that maybe somebody is frightened or angry or wants to keep leaving or something like that. And so say, how do I tenderly and lovingly take care of this person and participate with them? And I think one of the things we've learned is to keep stimulation as low as possible. And
this is for someone who has dealing dementia. With Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yeah, who has that mm-hmm. dementia. And there can be activities that someone can sit in a chair and do in the midst of the family gathering, which is fold washcloths. Something that can be done repetitively, that is quiet, then other people can sit by and take interest in, talk about the color of it, say, oh, I thought about folding them this way or something. So you're keeping the stimulation down. You're not talking down to someone, but you're trying to communicate with them in a way that they can fully participate.
I love that advice because it is a way to engage and not have to feel like you're trying to have a conversation like you might have in the past, which just isn't going to work in all cases.
And you're not calling upon the memory of how did you like that service last night? But you might say, when you were a child, what did you do? Because often people who are experiencing dementia can more readily recall what went on in their childhood decades ago, perhaps, than they can what happened yesterday or 2 hours ago.
When you are a person who in this time of joy and laughter is not feeling that joy and laughter, should you push yourself to feel it, or is it okay to sit and live with that, the hard feelings and the sad feelings? And, you know, when should you be pushing yourself out of those feelings if they're becoming detrimental? Laura?
Well, what's so important about grief is that we have to really experience it, and the only way out is through. So we have to really feel the pain and the sadness. And I think what's important around the holidays is to let other people know what we're feeling and experiencing and share so that they can support us.
How, though, do you then sort of allow space for sadness and grief, but not feel like you're overcome by maybe bitterness? You know, if you're let me read an email we got from a listener. So this listener emailed in and preferred not to be named, but says, being childless, not by choice, is a particularly difficult loss during the holiday season. No matter the reason, whether it's being without a partner or unable to conceive, it can carry from those in their 30s to those in their 60s. With traditions all around among friends and family, this holiday in particular can be challenging. The feelings can be wide-ranging, but the reminded loss of what one had expected to be and have is the primary one. There's also a desperation to be included with other families' traditions, and then when you are included, that family dynamic can make one feel like an outsider. Trying to create one's own traditions is often recommended, but that's not as easy as it sounds, and it doesn't quite have the desired outcome. So there's some real lifelong sadness in that email and in that person's life. But then also, how do you not feel bitter and angry at the people who have what you wanted to have?
Well, I think what's really great and what I'm impressed with the email is how aware the person is about the pain that they're experiencing. And what I hope is that they can share it and talk about it. Because in some ways, if we feel supported, if we have other people that can listen to us, if we have ways to make sense and make meaning, and if we have people that create community for us, they can help us to not feel so embittered.
Donna?
I think that's a wonderful response to that. I think first being self-aware, because we aren't always. And I love that this listener talked about the loss around expectations. And that's something that nobody can identify, because it's not that a person that was there is missing. And so I think families these days are made up of very different constellations. And so there might be people that this listener could align with who do get it, and that together they might strategize ways that their family can understand. That's a grief that is so deep. And also, I think about a grief that is lifelong. Mm-hmm. And that we're not going to have magic words and magic ways to remove that grief, except to acknowledge it and to be present for people who are experiencing it, and to truly care and be open to what they need.
Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
One other thought that I have, which is sometimes what's helpful is to think about the fact that when you have the loss of a dream, which is really what this person is talking about, part of what you want to do is have somebody ask, when you pictured this time in your life, what did you imagine it to be like? What were your hopes and dreams? If you had had a child, what were you hoping for? What did you imagine? Because in some ways, if we can grieve what we hoped, dreamed, desired, it allows room for the hope to come in to keep living the life we do have and making room for whatever other new possibility there might be.
So for somebody who's going through this, it's okay to think about sort of the fantasy, out 30 years right. that you thought you might have. And as right. a friend, is it?
Because if we ask about it, what was it that you dreamt or mm-hmm. expected? And then you can talk about how sad you are that that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Because in order to really hope again and to keep living, we do have to grieve what we desired that didn't come to be.
When do you know when you should actually reach out for professional help? Because, you know, the statistics show that very many people feel a sense of sadness or difficulty during the holidays. And sometimes that's interwoven with moments of real joy. And we've talked a little bit about reaching out to friends, talking about this loss that you're feeling. But when does it tip into something that you need to maybe get some professional help with? Donna?
I would say that if the experience in your life is that a loved one is very ill, and it's anticipated that they're going to die, I encourage people to get connected with a community counselor during that, someone who can really walk that journey with you through the death and beyond without you having to tell the story anew to someone.
When should you reach out for help?
And then I also think of grief in terms of function. Mm-hmm. And so if you're finding that you're not functioning, each day you feel as though you have not rested, even though you've slept at night, that you're not seeing any of your friends, that you're socially isolating, that you are drinking more alcohol than you typically would, that you are eating foods that don't make you feel well after you've eaten them, that you're finding ways to sort of push these feelings down and find immediate comfort rather than dealing with it. If your friends and loved ones are saying to you, I think you should talk to someone, if you're not allowing yourself to express any emotion in front of other people, those are all good signals to say, am I functioning in a way that works in my life, or am I finding that things are slipping away?
Laura, anything to add?
Well, I wanted to talk about how you know when to support kids. Can I throw that in
please.
Here?
Yeah.
So I agree with every single thing Donna said. And in many ways, we think about those same kinds of things for kids. But because kids grieve a little differently, we sometimes have to give it a little more time because kids grieve in intense, shorter bursts usually. But what we look to see is, you know, how significant are the changes in their behavior? Because kids often show us their pain and their suffering through their behavior. So what is their play looking like? What is their sleep like? What is their eating like? What are their relationships like? And how are things going in school? Because initially we expect that kids are going to need some settle-in time. But typically after the first 6 months of a significant loss, if we don't see changes where kids are functioning in ways that are more typical, that's when we may then look to get them support and help.
Does that go not just for the death of a sibling or a parent, but also right. family changes like divorce or a new parent coming into
Absolutely.
The mix?
Absolutely. Because I think initially, whenever we have these experiences, we're in crisis. And so some sleeplessness, not talking about things, some of those kinds of reactions are very typical. But if they persist over time, that's when we want to see other ways we can support them.
Yeah, go ahead, Donna.
Something that's important for people to know, when we do our bereavement calls to families at about 6 months after the death of their loved one to see how they're doing, so many people will say to us, I was devastated in the beginning and I really found it hard to find the ground under me. And then I started to really be able to function more successfully. And all of a sudden, I'm crying all the time again. I'm not sleeping. I'm distracted. And we let people know that studies have shown that that is a very normal time to revisit, in adults anyway, to revisit their grief in a very deep way. Not to worry. You will come again to a place where you're able to incorporate all of this into your daily life. But this is typically a time when people, I think because it becomes so real.
Mm-hmm. Are the holidays like that as well? Because, you know, for many people, there are so many traditions associated with the holidays that might remind you and sort of re-trigger those feelings about somebody who's died. You know, if your mother has just died, or your father, or maybe your sibling died a long time ago. But, you know, every time Christmas rolls around, you think about how you and your little sibling used to run down the stairs and open your presents in the morning, even if that person died a long time ago. Couldn't that resurface those feelings of grief and sadness again, too?
It can do that. I think that one of the strategies that one can use to work with that, rather than keep trying to just push it away, is to have that person's picture there. Make their favorite food. And so it's not just grandma's apple pie, but it's Aunt Jeannie's bread pudding that arrives on the table. And in that way, you are sharing the acknowledgement and the missing of that person with the people around you. You can make a toast to those that are no longer with us, and you can name them. You can shed a tear, and you can laugh and say, best memory, and tell stories together and do them. Prepare for it.
We have a note from Randy in Whiting who says, this Christmas will be the first in my 69 years without my mother. Mm. She died of a stroke in June while in hospice here in Middlebury. Fortunately, for last Christmas, we had a four-generation feast here in Vermont. At each place setting was a photocopy of a Christmas Day menu that my grandfather, Asa, had made for the troops he was serving with in France in 1918. We had just discovered the menu, along with letters he wrote to my grandmother from the front. We replicated most of the dishes that he and his comrades managed to scrounge up. It felt as if our fifth generation was in attendance. I believe it was comforting for my mother, who at 92 knew that her life was coming to an end. Rituals can be comforting. And Randy says, I can recommend beginning a tradition that recognizes the contributions of those who came before us at our Christmas dinners. We can offer them thanks as well. So similar to the lines of Donna, what you were saying, have a tradition that recognizes the people who aren't here. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're spending some time acknowledging that the holidays are not always full of warmth and joy for everyone, and not at every moment. Some people are dealing with feelings of sadness and loss that can really be exacerbated during this season. We're talking today with Donna Soltura, a social worker focused on palliative care and bereavement support at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, and Laura Basile, who has a therapy practice in Middlebury working with kids, teens, and their families. Let's go to Susan, who's calling in from Rutland. Hi, Susan. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I was just thinking about my own father, who died the day after Christmas back in 84, and it turned out that he was trying valiantly not to die on Christmas Day because his own father had died on Christmas Day. And I didn't know this when I was growing up. My brother and I were treated to very happy Christmas times, but then I noticed a change in him as we got to be teenagers, that he was sort of forcing himself to be happy. And so after his death, now holidays feel that way to me, they're kind of forced. And when the way I reacted when people would say, oh, come on, this is a happy time, come join us, be happy, that is too much. When you have the pain, trying to force yourself to be happy is makes it worse. And what I do now for the holidays is what I really much prefer, is just being alone. And I do happy things for myself, but I don't have to be happy for somebody else.
Susan, when friends say, oh, come on, or if they pressure you to say, well, we want you to be with us because we're worried about you, you know, how do you convince them, or how do you advise people that for some people like you, you're better, you feel more able to get through this time if you're by yourself?
Well, more or less just what you said, because I say, you know, I just have trouble being around people. A lot of people, especially if it's chaotic, you know, where a lot of different activity and a lot of different conversations I just want to run. That's partly also my temperament, but this time of the year, I just say, thank you very much. I appreciate your offer to be included, but I really need to be by myself.
Well, Susan, I really appreciate you sharing your perspective and experience with us, and I'm sorry to hear about your dad, but really glad that you shared that with us. Thank you. Let's talk to Thomas in Barton. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm 40 years old, which I've experienced the loss of both parents, unfortunately, due to terrible cigarettes. That's another conversation. But the thing is, for me, I find that keeping the traditions alive not only makes me feel good, but it almost seems like it's something my mother would want me to do. So despite being down and, you know, reminiscent of the time, I find, you know, it's just reassuring to me. And in a sense, it even makes me feel closer because there's a connection.
Well, Thomas, I really appreciate you sharing that perspective as well. And, you know, the idea that at 40, with both of your parents gone, there is that sadness, but also that connection to tradition that makes you happy and fills you with happy and sad thoughts at the same time. Thank you for that. You know, one of the interesting things from those two calls together is that it really is different for everybody. And how do you find the thing that's going to work for you? Because there are so many people who will, you know, in well-meaning ways give you advice for, oh, this is how you're going to get through it, or this is what you should do. So how do you find your gut and then trust it on what to do with the holidays, Laura?
Well, I think one of the things that's really helpful is to find experienced companions. And those are other people who have had loss that you can talk with about what you're experiencing. And part of it is to figure out, what do I need to do for my self-care? What is it that I need for this holiday, whether it's to stay connected to rituals or create new rituals? And what's really important, too, is to, as a family, talk together, because kids sometimes want to do things differently than their parents. And what's important is to anticipate and plan ahead.
We got a note from a listener who says, I lost my 25-year-old son right after Christmas 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. He died on his younger sister's birthday. Mm-hmm. It was sudden, no warning, just some virus. Time has not helped. The reason I am here is for my daughter and my husband. I don't want to live, but I have to for them. My son and I were very close. He didn't live in the same state, but we kept in touch constantly. I just miss him so much. Unfortunately, I do self-medicate with drinking. I don't think it's bad at this point, one drink a night after work, but I do like the numbness it provides. Donna, this listener is clearly in a lot of pain. Mm. What advice do you have for this person?
You know, the first thing I thought of was the group called Compassionate Friends. The listener can find them online by Googling Compassionate Friends. And that is support, free support groups made up of parents who have lost children for a variety of reasons. And one of the things people struggle with is thinking no one really understands this. You know, if we saw a movie that said that someone's son would unexpectedly die on his sister's birthday, we would say that would never happen. And this woman and her family have experienced that thing that is outside the realm of possibility, and yet that's her reality. And so I think that might be the greatest help for her, is to touch base with people who truly understand. I think if she identifies her drinking as self-medicating, that's red flag number one. It doesn't mean that she's an alcoholic. It doesn't mean that. No need to get frightened about that. But to just say, what am I not fully facing in a healthful way that instead I am doing in this way that just keeps pushing it down, that doesn't help the wound to heal as much as it ever will, but in fact kind of opens it up again. Alcohol is a depressant. And so, you know, we can feel worse after it. We don't expect that because it relaxes us, but it also helps us avoid the hard, hard work that it takes to accommodate this into our lives.
But that hard work, I mean, for 3 years, that constant feeling of pain, I mean, you can see why someone would say, I just need a break for a little while.
Yeah.
But it's still probably not a good idea.
Well, I think if when we say I'm self-medicating, you know, that's a phrase, and I'm not sure how this listener is using that phrase, but usually that phrase is one that indicates that we think, oh, this might not be okay. All three of these listeners who have communicated just emphasize the point, know thyself. Mm-hmm. You know, when Susan called and said that part of the crowd and the activity is just not who she is anyway. So we ask people to look at who you are, what rejuvenates you and what depletes you. And then try to peel away some of those things that deplete you and try to add into your day or your week more what rejuvenates you. This person who's written in may need to get on a massage table and just cry while someone gives her healing touch. And just experience that and allow her body to release some of these toxins, these emotional toxins. The death of her son is just wrong. It shouldn't happen. It's against nature. Parents should go first. But it's not the way it happens for so many people.
It's, yeah, I really feel this listener's grief. Mm-hmm. We got a note from Elise in Northfield, who says, I'm an immigrant from South America. I've been here for 20 years and I don't have much family here, but I had an amazing German Shepherd for almost 11 years. He was very sick and I had to put him down yesterday. Oh, Elise, what a terrible time, any time to have to put down your companion, but also to then be going through the holidays. We have a note from Susan in Norwich who says, I'd like to know how to support our granddaughters, ages 18 and 20, who live overseas. Their mother, our youngest daughter, is dying and will leave us in the days around Christmas. And our granddaughters are devastated as they're just setting out on their adult lives. Their loss is compounded by the fact that their father died just 2 years ago and they will be left without parents. How can we help from far away? Laura, do you have any advice?
Well, the biggest thing they can do is keep their hearts open to these two girls, that what they want to do is stay connected to them, be in touch with them, have them be involved as much as they can, even though they're far away. They can be FaceTiming, right? We're lucky with the advent of technology because we can really use that, because we want them to be part of the decision-making, part of the process, so they feel connected to it, even though they are very far away.
Oh, man, these are, I'm really feeling emotional listening to and reading some of these comments. We got another listener who says, I'm the parent of an incarcerated son who's currently serving time in Pennsylvania. It's very hard to be in the holiday spirit for the rest of us here in Vermont. We miss our boy so much and hope against hope that when he is released in 2 years, he will not join the huge percentage of incarcerated folks who return to prison. We've decided that our next holiday celebration will be in 2019. It's our best guess on how to cope. Let's go to Christine, who's calling in from Lyme, New Hampshire. Hi, Christine.
Hi, I'm Christine. I'm from Lyme, New Hampshire. And when my dad died quite a few years ago, it was the second parent to die. And I felt very lonely and unable to deal with the grief. The chaplain at the local hospital suggested two things which have helped me a lot. Pretend you're talking to your father about what's going on or some event, and then just say back to yourself what you think he would say to you. That really helped a lot because it was as if he were there. And another thing was just write down on paper things that you remember doing with him and kind of your history. And that helped a lot, too.
Christine, thank you for sharing tips. I appreciate that. And so glad that there is something that has offered you some relief that works for you. Marguerite is in Weston and is on the line with us. Hi, Marguerite.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. My husband died this summer after 35 years of a wonderful marriage. And I'm grieving and lonely. What helps me the most is when my friends invite me to do something with them, you know, like a cup of coffee or the movies or anything like that. Company makes my life much better. So if you have a friend or a relative who's had a recent loss, call them up and ask them over for a cup of coffee.
Marguerite, thank you. I'm sorry for your loss, and thanks for sharing that. So many people, so much loss. Also, I'm thinking about the listener who wrote in, who talked about a son who's incarcerated. You know, there are times when sadness or grief or hard feelings can come with shame, and I'm not sure they do for this listener, and shouldn't, but sometimes they do. A loss of a job might feel shameful, or even grief that you just can't seem to get over that you feel like you should have, and you're still feeling this sadness. How do you you know, how can somebody who's feeling this sadness but then feeling this shame sort of come in and color that sadness? How can they deal with that, or how do you open up to people when maybe you feel embarrassed about whatever your loss is? Laura?
And one of the things I think that's so important that comes underneath that is if a loss isn't sanctioned by our society or recognized the way it means to us, what it means to us, it makes it harder to grieve it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think being in support groups with other people who have similar experiences can be so healing and helpful, because we teach each other how to move through that shame or the guilt or the sadness or the embarrassment that we're feeling. So reaching out, and I know there's lots of support out there, but to really find people who have been through similar kinds of experiences and losses.
Donna?
Yeah, that's the thing, is to have people who truly understand. Parents of children who commit suicide are in a horrid place. Not only the loss of this child that they love so much, but also the shame of thinking, what are other people thinking? Or the self-shame, what did I not do or do that maybe if that had been different, my loved one would be alive today? It's a horrible feeling, and it's the most isolating, I think, of any kinds of bereavement.
You know, so 5 years ago, right at this time, I was suffering a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. That is the kind of thing that, you know, that was a very personal sadness, but it wasn't something that I wanted to share mm-hmm. with anyone, you know, save my husband and a few family members. And then you have to go into these holiday gatherings and you're feeling this sadness, but that is not one that, and there are others like that, that people feel where you have a grief that you're dealing with, but it's not necessarily something you feel comfortable sharing. How do you deal with that when you can't reach out to others to say, I need your support because of this, if you don't want to share it?
Well, that's where really good self-care is so important, because we know that we might not want to talk about it, so we need to take care of ourselves. And I was really glad that Donna mentioned the notion of doing some sort of body work, because grief really sits in our spirits, in our physical bodies, in our energy fields. So any kind of therapeutic touch work like that can be very helpful, because in some ways we have to take care of our spirit, our hearts, and our emotions so that we can go into these gatherings and not really necessarily share all the pain we're feeling.
Donna?
Another thing we can do is let people know ahead of time. A strategy that I work with a lot of people is to write a letter in advance of the event to the people who are going to attend. And that's where you can say, here's what this season is bringing for me, possibly for you as well. And so here's how I'd like to do it, if that feels all right with you. People really want guidance, because they just don't know what to say. And they often say things that are so well-intended, but that just cut. Mm-hmm. And they would never, ever want to do that to you. So it's okay to say, we're not going to talk about it, but I hope you will all hold her or him or our baby in your memory mm-hmm. today.
Let's go to Pippa in Bakersfield. Hi, Pippa. You're on the air.
So I guess I'd like to share that I lost my brother to suicide when I was 17 and he was 18. And then my father a year later. And so holidays have really, even though their loss is very ever-present every day, I feel it, you know, on the holidays the most. And grief really comes alive when we're reminded about the loss. So what I'd like to offer others is that you reach out to the friends of those you've lost and ask for stories.
That helps you, Pippa, to hear the stories, even when it brings up that sadness for you?
Well, hearing the stories really reminds you who they were, and you get to have them come alive again. So.
Yeah, Pippa, I'm so sorry for your loss and really appreciate you being willing to share that with us today. So many people really sharing the deep, deeply personal, deeply devastating parts of their lives. And it's clear to me that, you know, this is a time when people need to reach out for some support, because it can be very, very hard. Any final thoughts for people who are suffering and, you know, suffering in silence perhaps now, Laura?
My thought for kids is to make sure they have a space to really express their emotions, whether you're using creative art play with clay and drawing and any kinds of art materials, as well as physical space to really let the big feelings and emotions out, being able to run around and jump, or even having a quiet space in the house where they can be with their feelings and being able to really just listen, to be there, and to ask them what they need during this holiday time.
Donna?
My thought is to have an exit strategy, that whether you are in recovery and you can feel that you need to get out of there, or whether you're grieving and you're at a family event, park your car where you can leave without four people having to move their cars first. Let the host know that you may need to do it. It won't be that they've done anything wrong, but that you're trying to determine how to best use your limited energy right now.
Well, to all of you who are feeling sadness, feeling loss and grief, I appreciate the sadness that this time can bring, and hope for all of you that there are strategies that help you cope and people that help you get through these times and all times, and I'm wishing you much peace. Donna Soltura is a social worker focused on palliative care and bereavement support at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. Donna, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Laura Basile teaches part-time as a visiting assistant professor at Middlebury College and has a therapy practice in Middlebury working with kids, teens, and their families. Laura, thanks.
Thank you, Jane.